Ho, 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 and Merry Christmas and other midwinter holiday celebrations. Greetings to you all. We hope you've had sufficient food and beverage and are ready to settle down with us, your Tech Weekly team, your very own ghost of Christmas future, to ponder 2009. Joining me is Jemima, Mrs. Cratchit Kish, Charles, Jacob Marley Arthur, and Bobby, Tiny Tim Johnson. You can call me Ebenezer. I imagine your celebrations have been suitably technologized, Charles?
Well, yeah, partly. I mean, but if I'm Jacob Marley, Marley was dead.
You're deep.
The first three words of the book.
Bugger technology, it's all about the food.
And Bobby.
Tiny Tim.
Tiny Tim.
What are you trying to say about me?
Oh. You were standing further away from the camera than you thought.
Where's Bobby? We can hardly see him. He's so far away. Hey, listen, I gave myself Scrooge, so don't feel so bad.
True.
On this week's show, the final one of 2009, we're going to be taking a trip into the next 12 months to forecast what will become of the iPod, Yahoo, and robotics. Hunker down, folks. It's cold outside. Let's cast off social injustice and poverty to embrace the goodness that the season has to offer. And don't forget the batteries. Welcome to Tech Weekly from The Guardian. First up, the economic outlook ain't looking so pretty. And according to the academic and statistical forecasts, we're going to be slumping for at least the next 12 months.
There comes a time in every man's life.
Welcome to the family, Jack.
When he must choose between doing what he's told.
Don't rob the boat, Jack.
And doing what is right.
If we don't get this company on the net, we're dead.
You're a loose cannon, Jack. You have no idea what you're up against.
In a world where you're only as good as your technology.
We're going with Sun.
They're watching you, Jack.
Loose Cannon is my middle name.
Critical Decision. A .in.com production.
That's absolutely ridiculous.
I was a little hoarse when I was recording that voiceover.
Oh, I missed Dom DeLuca.
That guy died, didn't he?
Yeah, Dom DeLuca died this year. What a shame.
If there's one man who's going to die making a voiceover.
It's going to be for a Sun Microsystems ad. Now, Charles, speaking of, you've got a surprising prediction about a company that you believe will go down this year.
Well, the credit crunch is actually going to be moving. By the time we get to May of 2009, it's going to be into its third year, because actually it all kicked off in April and May of 2007 with the collapse of a hedge fund that was run by Bear Stearns. Things are getting harder and harder. And I think Sun Microsystems is going to, I'm afraid, go down. You know, I like the guys at Sun Microsystems. They're terrific people. Don't get me wrong. But the economics of it are just a bit tight. They've got $1 billion of debt. They've only got $3 billion of capitalization as the stock stands at the moment. And they've only got $2.3 billion of cash. As that debt comes up for reserving, it gets more and more expensive. As your stock price falls, it gets harder to do. As it gets harder to do, your stock price falls, you get into a vicious circle. And Sun has been losing money. It's in a difficult place. And if I was to come up with another sort of outlier prediction, I'd also say that I don't think Palm is in a good place at the moment. It's losing money and it's finding it hard to persuade people that it's really got any sort of great ideas in the pipeline.
So if Sun does go down, who's going to benefit?
Dell would certainly do well. HP would do well out of it. Basically, all the companies that Sun is trying to fight with.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of one of Sun's problems is that it kind of competes at different levels up and down the entire stack, really. So, you know, it invests a lot on owning on running everything from start to finish. So, which makes it, you know, if it works, it's brilliant for them. If it doesn't, then it's troubled. But I mean, there are other things that I think are going to come out of the credit crunch as well. You know, what are the business opportunities? What are the changes we're going to see?
Particularly looking at companies in the media sector, if they're clever, I think they'll start outsourcing much more of the specialist web services that they need, rather than trying to develop things like social media tools or mobile services with their in-house teams. They'll go to specialists, and I think only a minority of companies are going to do this, but that's what they really should be doing. And you know, a lot of these contracts don't even have to cost any money. I mean, some of the partnerships between Web2 services and publishers can be free, and it's an incredibly efficient way of extending your service and reaching that audience without spending shed loads of money. But there's a kind of mindset in traditional media that you have to spend big money and have a formal contract set up. So I think that's definitely something we'll see more of this year.
I think there's a lot of capability there, a lot of potential for Amazon and Microsoft and Google offering their storage, their sort of incremental storage offerings, and also their incremental processing offering. With Amazon, the storage is S3, and then it has the Elastic Cloud Compute, I think ECC, which is its you pay per bit of processing, and that's a really good model going forward for a lot of companies who want basically to not have to splash out on loads of servers and just pay for it as they use it.
So, Bobby, who do you think is going to rise like a phoenix out of the fire of the credit crunch?
where will I be putting my money? I really don't know. I think we're going to see strong companies are going to continue to be stronger. I mean, you look at this. Like Charles said, Amazon, Google, they could really make a killing by kind of expanding into areas that other people need. I think we might see Yahoo cease to exist as we know it over the next 12 months. In fact, maybe on a much shorter basis than that. Bits of Yahoo maybe get sold off to various companies and all that's left is, a hollow shell at the end of it. But I think the story there really is that this is actually a good time. If you've got a good startup with something to sell to people who are in desperate need of it now, then actually, you might not do too badly.
Well, it looks like the future is bright for companies who are quick and who use the facilities at their disposal. Now, one industry that really shines when it comes to recessions is, ironically, the most expensive technology industry. Yeah, computer games.
Welcome to the Aperture Science Enrichment Center. You may be required to perform simple tasks, such as locating an exit. These simple tasks may be supplemented with insurmountable obstacles. Thanks to the Aperture Science handheld portal device, the impossible is easy. Now you're thinking with portals.
That was Portal, a famous independent game done good. Now, indeed, the last time that there was a recession, it was the worst of times for traditional industries, but the best of times for computer games development, publishing, and distribution. In fact, that's really where it came into British fruition. They boomed with bedroom programmers, buoyed by the availability of new and cheap hardware. Now, we've got a glut of available open source software and, crucially, a phenomenal number of distribution platforms. And many old school employees of the big companies are increasingly frustrated with the resistance that their new parents are demonstrating to innovation. And so it's likely that they'll leave their comfort blankets and, using the new tools at their disposals again, will go back to their roots and create new and innovative games. At least that's what I hope. Bobby, what do you think about that?
I think you're right, though. I think, there's also there are lots of tools out there, and there are more ways to get things out there. More people are prepared to go out and buy, low-cost indie games from, for their iPhone or download things from for the Xbox. I mean, this stuff's really broadening out, and you've also got casual gaming really coming into the mix very strongly now. Might get hit by the advertising sector because it's hard to make money from casual games unless you get zillions of people paying for adverts to go alongside them. But, I mean, I think it's looking pretty good, isn't it?
Well, what is interesting about this is the number of distribution platforms before, because I remember several years ago I was at a panel and they were talking about whether the PC is the people's platform. And everybody was saying, no, the PlayStation is the people's platform, and the Xbox or the Wii were saying that, that's what people wanted. But in fact, it seems that we really have come back around. And while a lot of the consoles themselves now have distribution platforms like BLA and all those PlayStation Network and all that kind of stuff. People are really heading to the PC to throw their games and their content out there. So what I think will really emerge this year is some kind of system to tell whether a game is crap or not. Because historically, the gatekeepers have been the console, the console holders, the platform holders.
Do you need an algorithm?
Yes, please. And then would you patent that and perhaps give me the patent rights? That would be awesome.
Okay.
Charles, do you have any thoughts on the games, the future of the games industry next year?
Well, the iPod Touch and the iPhone are really interesting gaming platforms, and the fact that those have been so successful, actually, for lots of really cheap games, you know, sort of free games, 99 cent games even, you know, just the, you know, the iBeer thing where you tip it up and it's like a pint of beer. You know, little things like the little inventive things are, I think, very promising.
Do you think, though, that this is going to be the year of the mobile game? Because it's just been, it's, people have been putting it off. But with something like the iPhone or some of the other touch facilities, it seems that more and more people are starting to make, using these open source texts and the APIs, they're starting to make actual interactive entertainments. Is it possible that people could actually engage with mobile phone gaming this year?
Trouble is, it's too split between the many platforms. You have the RIM platform, you have the Symbian platform, you have the Windows Mobile, you have the, you know, the Apple one. And if you're a gamer who's really looking to hit a market with it, you know, which one do you write for? It's like trying to choose which console you write for. Do you write for all of them? So I don't think it's quite there. But I think that, you know, like I say, the iPod Touch and the iPhone are very interesting because of the whole tilt accelerometer thing.
Jemima, this year we saw quite a lot of interesting gaming cross-media applications. So, you know, some of the alternate reality games and even some of the stuff that we were talking about a couple weeks ago when with the MSN Kirill stuff and how they were going to do that. Do you see anything, do you see more engagement with games this year, or do you think it's just going to just potter along?
Well, it'd be lovely if it was. But in terms of more traditional publishers trying to experiment in the games industry, I'm a bit pessimistic, really, that that's where they're going to put their money, because unless there's a proven way that they're going to get their, you know, return on investment, I just don't think they're going to do it. So I'd love it if they did. And as I've said a few times, you know, I think there's lots of potential in exploring mobile gaming and how that weaves into sort of editorial or digital content, you know, like video stories and things. But it's just not going to happen this year.
Well,
sorry.
Hopefully. That's okay. Well, hopefully by the end of 2009. Hopefully by the end of 2009, and once we kind of get our bedrock back, there will be new forms of innovative interactive entertainment, the likes of which we will have never dreamt of. And honestly, thank goodness for that.
This is Jack Schofield, the computer editor. The highlight of 2009 should be the arrival of at least the beta version of Microsoft Windows 7. We expect Steve Ballmer, Microsoft boss, to announce that at the CES show early in January, and quite a few of us should be using it by certainly the spring of next year, and that should be fun.
This is Keith Stewart from the Games Blog. I think the most exciting thing that's going to happen in 2009 is the rise of the everyman hero. There's two games that I'm thinking of here. One of them is Infamous from Sucker Punch Studios, who did the Sly Cooper games on PlayStation. And another game is I Am Alive, the survival horror game from Ubisoft. These are both games about normal people against incredible circumstances. Both of them based around huge explosions in massive cities and how they survive in the aftermath. Quite interesting games, and I think this is going to set a precedent for 2009. I think it's all about normal people dealing with exceptional circumstances.
So the gadget success of 2008 wasn't the philanthropic OLPC. It wasn't the micro notebooks, though they are quite pretty and light and affordable. And it wasn't the new BlackBerry, which everybody had actually predicted. God, you go to the US and people are sort of consuming BlackBerries.
We like didn't say that.
Well, no. I saw that.
It's not in the very States. Good. It's not very.
It may not be very good, but people had expected that
the storm?
Simply from
you mean
the
storm.
Yeah, just oh. from on the basis of the established user base in the States, they thought it was going to be something
terrible. Menu design,
massive.
Terrible.
But no, it has to be the Apple iPhone.
So, as we arrive at iPhone's first birthday, we're gonna take it to the next level, and today we're introducing the iPhone 3G.
The iPhone 3G. Well, that was last year. So what about this year? Charles, what's the iPhone's future in 2009?
Well, we're going to talk a little later about what we're expecting to see at the Macworld announcements. But just in terms of where the iPhone is now, the expectation is that more and more people are going to be writing apps for it. It's going to start to push into the enterprise. I think you're going to see some moves there. And all the mobile operators are going to be really keen to have an iPhone, because they're all going to be encouraging other companies to come up with things that are not iPod killers, but at least iPhone copiers, things that, you know, embody the same sort of functionality. I've been trying out an HTC Touch, for example, which uses Windows Mobile, and it tries to get there. I saw someone today who was using a Samsung, which had very good Touch functionality. The way, though, particularly the thing about the iPhone and the Apple Touch is that they're mobile internet devices. They really, really are. And that's the game changer here, is that the mobile operators get people to use the internet, get the 3G, you know, return all their investment on 3G.
How long before O2 is no longer the sole provider or the sole network?
Wasn't it a year, the exclusive deal?
I'm trying to dredge it up from the back of my memory. It's either 12 or 18 months from the UK launch, which was November last year.
So yeah, something big is going to happen there with all of the other companies leaping on it, and hopefully that we'll see the price coming down.
I think Charles is absolutely correct on the mobile internet point. That to me is where we're going to see a lot of things going. I mean, finally, you know, that was using the internet on an iPhone for the first time, you realised how crap you'd had it for so long on all the other phones, and everybody else realised it too. I mean, you look at how quickly all the other companies have kind of bricked it over what the iPhone can do, and I think we're really going to see other gadgets starting to use Wi-Fi or internet type.
This is the point that I wanted to make, because I've been playing around with the little flip video cameras for a while, and I've tried the Ultra and the Minnow, and they're both really interesting gadgets. But I think what would be really interesting is when those become, at the very least, Wi-Fi enabled, if not, you know, fully mobile enabled.
Horrors at the pub.
I know, but you know, the Minnow in particular is targeted at sort of teenagers and stuff, and you could see them partnering with something like Quick.com or Kite, and just sending stuff direct to the web, and then that starts to get really interesting.
So the iPhone will still be the gadget, but there will be increasingly adept pretenders to its throne, whether they're Wi-Fi enabled or not. And this should open up mobile technology enough that bedroom programmers can have a go. We've had a Santa's mailbag-sized selection of predictions come from you, but these are the ones that we'd place our money on. First of all, from David Samaria, the buzzword from 2009 is aggregation. Thoughts on that, Jemima? Aggregation?
Absolutely. I mean, I think we've said in a very recent program that actually it's not the content makers that really make the money. It's the guys that aggregate the stuff, and the guys that do that really, really well. I mean, that is, after all, what Google does with its search, and that's what YouTube does, and that's what Flickr does. You know, these are the places where people go. So, you know, the combination between mechanical aggregation and human editorial aggregation is extremely valuable and not really fully explored yet.
Well, next up, Jonathan Hopkins says 2009 will be the year of the rise of the live web, where static web stuff will start to feel a bit, you know, 2008. What do you think of that, Bobby?
I think there's a space for, you know, you look at Facebook, for example, and compare it to something like Twitter, and I think it feels slow to me. You know, it doesn't feel instant. It's not clever enough to kind of understand what you're doing as you do it. I think that's something that we might see is just the whole process of engaging with, you know, whether it's social media or elsewhere. The systems understanding what you're doing and then broadcasting that off somewhere else without you having to do anything.
Do you mean Twitter twittering for you without you doing anything?
Well, I think, you know, whether it's, you know, broadcasting your location by GPS. I mean, that's a fairly lame way of doing it at the moment. But all of these things, you know, if you can aggregate, as we said before, you know, you aggregate people's actions without them having to do anything. There's some really interesting information there, and if you can dig around in it, it could be pretty valuable.
Meanwhile, Nev Stokes goes back to the Twitter idea, but he says US patent reform, which is first. Twitter charges or dies.
Yeah.
More mobile services, including mobile ticketing, and we've touched on that already. LED lights become popular.
Yeah.
And Formula One declines. Charles, Any or all of them?
I'm thinking yes on all of those. I think Nev Stokes is channeling me there. LED lights are a way of cutting your bills in terms of electricity bills quite radically. And the Formula One declining, I think that TV companies aren't going to have the money. And Twitter charges or dies, yeah, actually, you know, it is time, guys. You've got to make some money somewhere.
And finally, Tom Phillips offers, and I love this, internet becomes self-aware, complains that Robert Scoble is making it itch, destroys humanity. Yahoo, Microsoft deal delayed again. And speaking of fantastic stories of self-aware robots, will the future be cybernetic?
In the 21st century, a weapon will be invented like no other. This weapon will be powerful, versatile, and indestructible. Arnold Schwarzenegger is the Terminator. Your future is in its hands.
So, Bobby, will we meet or will we become the Borg in 2009?
Well, okay, so everybody knows I have a bit of an obsession with robots, and that's fine. But I really think we're on the verge of starting to see some breakthrough stuff. So for my prediction for 2009 is that there will be some kind of entire robotic limb attached to a human being somewhere on the planet. So we've seen, you know, we've seen people developing kind of cybernetic devices or cyber biology in the past. And, you know, there's things like pacemakers and implants and things like that that are already going on. But I think there's going to be a moment when somebody finally plugs in, you know, something quite complex basically into your brain and you can use it. So we've already seen there's a Scottish company called iLim, which...
iLim?
Okay. So it is. They've already developed a kind of bionic hand, but I think there's more scope. And Dean Kamen, who you may know as the incredible inventor of the revolutionary personal mobility device, the Segway,
revolutionised my approach to humour. I have to say,
is also
how you can laugh at gadgets.
Yeah. Oh, do you Project Ginger? Do you remember? Yeah, do you remember all of that? But Dean's working on some stuff as well. There are lots of people in lots of different fields all plugging into this at the same time.
Plugging in?
Yes.
Yes. Well,
it does actually have, you know, real world applications, which is that there are for example people who are injured in the military actions that are going on around the world who really could benefit from limbs like this. So there's a very real need for it.
But ultimately, and this brings up a much more philosophical and deeper conversation perhaps than necessary at the moment in this roundup program, but what are the ethics of this? At what point does somebody become robot versus a human being with a cybernetic limb implanted?
Well, it's all about the brain, isn't it? If the brain represents the soul and the soul is the essence of somebody, without getting too philosophical. but, you know, if you had, I don't know, a car accident and you had your arm replaced by some amount of technology, that's just your arm. It doesn't affect your brain and your outlook and your personality and your being, which is contained in your brain. If you had a brain... an electronic brain fitted onto your head, a bit like C-3PO in the Star Wars film where his head's cut off and he's transplanted onto one of the android clones. Oh, dear. that's a whole different kettle of fish. That's not going to happen for like 100 years or something.
Well, what's the next thing after a limb, though, Bobby? I mean, if we do have a limb, is it conceivable in the... Okay, perhaps not in 2009, but is it conceivable that we could eventually have some more... revolutionary organs
steady, Alex. We know what you're like.
Well, let's just think we can go a bit science fiction here for a minute, because I think some of these things are actually pretty close. I think, you know, we might see if you could have a robotic eye, for example, it could easily record everything that you see, which would then, you know, change memory or whatever, you know.
We wouldn't have to take photographs anymore.
Oh no, a printout of my thoughts would be amazing. Yeah, scatterbrained.
But we're sort of there already in the sense that, you know, people are trying out bionic eyes, and I've got to point out that, you know,
Flicker could make it.
A member of my family has a cochlear implant because he's deaf, and the cochlear implant stimulates the nerve. So, you know, is he cybernetic? Mm. There are thousands of people walking around the world now.
I think we should apply a version of Norman Tebbit's cricket test to this and say if Skynet takes control and tries to overthrow human governments, whose side are you going to be on? That's how you decide whether you're a cyborg or not.
Depends who's in power.
Well, that leads me nicely to my close, which is, so this is a recommendation for all you entrepreneurial business types. I reckon you should start a Terminator securities company just in case next year Arnie comes back from the future.
Hello, I'm Victor Keegan, and next year, I think, and I've said this every year for the past few years, so it's still going to be true, it's going to be the year of the mobile phone. There'll be more mobile people with mobile phones in the world than have got toothbrushes. It's that big. There are already over 60 functions on a mobile phone which you could sell separately, you know, a calculator, a camera, or whatever. This week, I read of two more. A fax machine. You can fax from a mobile phone. You can scan now from a mobile phone, scan text in, and next year it's going to get even bigger. Why? Because mobile phones are going to go ballistic on the internet. The internet is a free telecommunications structure. You don't need to build all these telegraph poles and everything, but you've got to link up to it. And how do you link up to it? With a mobile phone. At the moment, it's people do it through Skype and their PCs, but now there are a whole raft of companies that are linking up from a mobile phone to the internet, giving you free telephone calls. And I think this is going to be really interesting next year, especially as we enter a recession and people are going to be very cost conscious, and I think there'll be a huge demand for it. I have another prediction for next year, and that's that virtual worlds are going to come of age. They're a bit in the doldrums at the moment because everyone thinks Second Life is dead, you know, it only gets publicity when someone gets married and divorced on it, and I understand all that, but inside lots of things are happening because there are various ones in the pipeline, like there's a virtual football game that anyone around the world can join in a game of 11 for football, and there are at least three companies that I know of that are building virtual reproductions of London, and you can walk down a very lifelike street. So next year I think that the internet's going three-dimensional. I think virtual worlds will be quite important.
Yeah, hi, this is Greg from the Games Blog. I think for 2009 I think we're going to see the return of the story in games. Primarily titles like Heavy Rain and Alan Wake, if that ever arrives, are really going to bring kind of story to the forefront in gaming. Obviously, we're still going to have guns and violence and all the rest of it, but I think Heavy Rain and games like that are really going to make players kind of think and kind of feel they're actually in doing something kind of really exciting and new.
So we've had cybernetic futures, innovative entertainment, and a new mobile world order. Let's come back to Earth and think a little bit about green technologies. Bobby, President-elect Obama promised to pour a lot of money into sustainable, oil-avoiding environmental technologies before he was elected in November. How do you think that this is actually going to translate into practice in 2009, now that we are in a little bit of an economic kerfuffle?
Yeah, well, it's difficult, isn't it? I mean, you know, I think there is a sense that Obama might step back from a few things that he's talked about in the past and use the economic climate as an excuse. But he has announced his candidate for energy secretary, which is a physicist called Steve Chu, who is really well respected and you know, quite a forward thinker on a lot of this stuff.
He's
a Nobel Prize winning physicist. I mean, you know, that's pretty good for starters. And currently runs some labs up at Berkeley, just up the road from me. But I think, you know, what I hope we see is a real kind of, a moonshot. Somebody saying, we need to be in a place we that is a million miles away very soon. You know, maybe by 2020, let's get the whole of America running on alternative energy. And you need a kind of an amazing target to reach out for in order to get everyone else to rally behind it.
Now, Charles, do you think that this really is feasible, that this is going to happen based upon, you know, the fact that oil is starting to plunge and it is too expensive to do green tech and innovation and all that kind of stuff?
The idea of a moonshot, you know, I moment is a really good one, and I think that Obama might be the sort of person who could come up with that. I mean, when JFK did the moonshot announcement, that was 1962, and he said they'd have someone put the man on the moon by the end of the decade. And for Obama, that would be something like saying, you know, move to, I don't know, 50% of our what we're using now in oil by, say, 2015 or so. The trouble with green tech is that it tends to be expensive, it tends to have a long payoff time, and when the price of oil falls, the break-even point goes distant. So it really needs for the price of oil to rise to about $80 a barrel before it becomes effective.
And actually, it might be worth, this is slightly going off on a tangent, but the World Economic Forum in Davos later on in January has actually asked members of the public to answer the question, do you think that the environmental agenda is going to be shoved aside in favour of looking at the economy, which has kind of overtaken everything these days. And so we will be looking at some point into some of the responses people have put onto that. And for the first time ever, actually, one YouTuber will be able to actually go to the Economic Forum, all expenses paid, if they ask interesting questions. But yes, that's the key issue.
Well, I think what they'll need to do is reposition, reposition it as a self-interest case, you know, and say, okay, there is an environmental thing going on here, but actually, energy independence is really important politically and economically. We can create millions of jobs doing this. Just kind of rebalance everything and make it about, you know, striving for a better future rather than trying to fix problems from the past. I think, you know, that's been Obama's message the whole way along. So if he carries on in that frame, then I think he might go for it.
Now, this is all very US-centric, and that's, hey, well and good. But what are the implications, do you think, for this country? Is there going to be any trickle down? Are we going to see any environmental technology funded by the government here?
I don't think that the government's going to start pouring money into environmental technology. There'll always be the startup funds and things like that. And there are a lot of companies in the UK which are looking to do things in green environmental technology. Their problem is always funding. So, for example, when the Department of Trade and Industry, as it used to be, would come up with the funding for solar panels, for example, you know, it just sells out faster than take that tickets. It's just one of those things where people really want to do it, but government can't subsidise it enough. And the problem is that while the price of oil is low, as it is just at the moment, but you can bet it's going to rise, people tend not to look far enough ahead.
Well, technology truly can save the world, and it sounds like people do want it. The next question is how fast it can go.
Dear Jane, I know you're still mad at me for taking the job, but it was my dream job.
Yes, I am still mad, Adam. You seem to think everything is just going to carry on like before.
There's never a good time to lose connection. The new BT Home Hub gives you the best wireless range of any UK broadband provider, so you get a better connection.
Oh, I have so many problems with that ad, like on so many different levels. Not only...
And relax.
Oh, man, I just got really angry there.
I didn't notice, actually.
So you see the steam coming out of my eyes. So, Charles... broadband, how fast will we go?
Well, BT is still rolling out its ADSL 2+ program, which should mean that people will be seeing roughly a doubling of their broadband speeds. ADSL 2+ gives you up to 24 megabits per second rather than the very slow 8 megabits per second that people can theoretically get up to at the moment. The average that people actually have across the country, 2 megabits per second.
Virgin Media...
And ADSL 2+, on average, you'll see an improvement to 4 megabits per second. So, you know, it's a doubling.
Virgin Media, who launched their service in December, said that their new service gives up to 50 megabits per second.
Yeah, up to. Zero when it's not working, obviously. And and also there's the problem that the fibre, this 50 megabit fibre, only really runs up to the cabinet in the street. So you then have the question of how fast it goes in the space in between. And if it's going over a copper line, then the maximum it can do is about 24 on ADSL 2+.
So these are the numbers, right? And these are the theoretical numbers that we can get up to. If in some kind of crazy world we did actually eventually have that you know speed of broadband next year, 24 megabits, what could we do? What could we do with it?
We could fully extend the iPlayer into all sorts of fancy forms like HD and fully extend the archive for that as well. So, you know, you could watch any Blue Planet thing on the BBC and it would be great. Well, they're talking about extending the iPlayer to opening up the technology, maybe, if we're lucky, not just to other broadcasters as a kind of white label service, but maybe to startup companies as well. They'd either open the platform or they'd open the technology, one or the other. But there's a huge amount of potential with that, and it's in the interests of everyone in the TV industry and in the tech industry to sort of steer the BBC and those that decide what the BBC is allowed to do in the right direction.
But there's a teeny fly in the ointment, which is that ISPs are going to say, well, you know, you've got all this more extra data coming down, we're going to need to charge you a bit more. And you're probably going to see a fragmentation of what ISPs charge people because they're going to say, well, if you want to have the iPlayer HD service, then you're going to have to pay a bit more.
Yeah, well, they can make money off that. Yeah, they can make money off that. They can come up with new iPlayer packages.
Absolutely. I'm only saying that that's probably what's going to happen as a result.
And they probably won't stop complaining about there being too much stuff on their network. You know, oh my God, the you're now watching HD video. Our network can't cope with it. Oh, what's going
it's
on?
Like selling people petrol and then complaining that they drive their cars to places. It's ridiculous. They have to get over it.
But we're talking very specifically about the iPlayer, whether it's proprietary or not. There are other things that are out there in the market. You know, things like TiVo,
BitTorrent.
Well, but perhaps. But there are other legal.
It's a content provider. BitTorrent is a legal content provider.
Yes. But Bobby, over in the States, and to a smaller extent here with things like Sky Plus, the iPlayer has competition. How likely do you see something like the iPlayer, something like the increase in broadband? What do you see that as actually being feasible? It's not yet. It's not spread out. It's not sent out to the US at the minute. I mean, what impact do you see something like this having over there?
I think actually what might be more interesting, something I've been watching for a while, is, you know, if we think about TiVo and Sky Plus and video recorders of all different kinds, you know, if you hit that kind of home hub, that digital hub space, where you're routing anything through the internet and then onto your TV, then that starts to change a lot of things. And Charles recently wrote a column about this, which kind of hit the nail on the head. You know, people have been talking about this for years, but we're only really starting to get to the point where it's going to matter. I think there's a lot of rights issues. I mean, if you're trying to do this stuff legally and you're piping internet content out to lots of different countries, you know, I think people are going to start really being aware that, you know, you can't get some good stuff in one country that you can get in another. So whether it stops people torrenting or not is a different question. But you know, I think this stuff is finally starting to come good. I mean, Hulu is one of the biggest sites in America now, and it's really pretty good. So I think we'll see more of the same.
And more of this in the new year. Well, that is actually it for this year. Next year, we're back. So no rest for the weary. Bobby will be earning his crust as a one-man media node in Las Vegas at CES and at Macworld. Of course, we'll be covering it. Bobby, what are your predictions?
Oh, you know, I'm really a bit confused about what's going on this time round. Normally, you get some pretty good signals. I think lots of companies are actually scaling back quite a lot of what they're going to be announcing in January. So, you know, it might end up being a bit disappointing. You know, it might be small iterative improvements. I don't think we're going to see kind of much massive stuff from the big tech companies. I think they're all, you know, in a bit of a holding pattern for the next few months.
I'm expecting some new software from Apple, possibly an update to its iWork suite and its iLife suites, and also software for the iPhone that lets you copy and paste.
Copy and paste.
Maybe multiple message sending.
Oh, no, don't be daft.
Oh, sorry.
Jemima, do you have any predictions for CES or Macworld?
No, there's lots of things I like, but I don't want to ruin the surprise.
Oh, it's Christmas!
Sorry. Nah.
Or choose a midwinter holiday of your choice.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's it. Thank you very much for hanging out with us over the past 365 days, and all the best for the next ones. Cheers as well to Jemima, Charles, Bobby and Scott. Do you guys have any plans for the new year?
Food. It's my consistent theme of the Midwinter Eating Festival that we celebrate.
Yes, food and drink.
Bobby, what are yours?
Well, I'm you're coming round to mine,
I know,
aren't you?
I'm implicated in this, so I need to know what I'm doing at New Year.
I think we're going to have an exciting Californian technology hands around the world kind
of sushi followed by Pilates on the beach or something, isn't it? And then some wheatgrass shots at midnight.
We'll Twitter the whole thing, don't worry. Anyway, until then, I'm Alex Krotowski. Have a great New Year.